vibe, fresh from sports, huh? Got the city going crazy when we work, huh? We top two, but we ain't two, we in first, huh? And when you need the real, we is who you search, huh? D-Lo, KC, D-Lo, KC, D-Lo, KC, D-Lo. We your number one spy.
Yes, sir. What's good, baby? We welcome you in here one more time for Friday. Bye. Already 90 degrees outside, man. This summer weather is hitting. We welcome you in here to the Friday, June 27th edition of D'Lo and KC. I'm Damian Barling.
The ultimate needle mover in God Bone himself.
We skeleton crew today because no Kenny Caraway.
Acknowledge me.
No Jesse Tapia.
What are you doing with him?
We are truly live.
From the worst slums of Sacramento.
And my man Kyle Mattson over here working double shift trying to do 50 things all at once. So we appreciate you, brother. And we appreciate you so much for tapping in here. YouTube.com/ESPN1320, Twitch.tv/ESPN1320. Shout out to everybody listening on the radio 1320 AM or 98.5 FM HD2, where the signal is crystal clear over there. Kyle's doing all of his post-show work. He's going to join me. He'll obviously be with me throughout the day, but he's going to join me here coming up in about 15 minutes to talk some things, Kings, that went on over the last couple of days and what might be ahead here in the next couple of days. That's all on the way. Of course, it's Friday. Our man Eddie Gonzalez is going to be with us in the 2 o'clock hour. We've got quite a few things to talk about, man. Last night just kind of came and went almost exactly as we predicted. It was a quiet night, one around the league. There was a lot of movement. There were a ton of trades over the last 2 days, which I always think it's interesting. I said this yesterday. It felt like, it might have been a couple of days ago. It might have been leading into the draft rather than after the first day. But it felt like for a solid year, maybe even longer, we were talking about this class. We were talking about this draft class. We were talking about how many players would be available. We were talking about, you know, how deep these picks might get. And then by the time it actually rolled around, obviously it was the Cooper Flagg sweepstakes, but it was also, you know, Ace Bailey, which is kind of a weird situation. We could talk about that. Dylan Harper, all of these different guys who you kind of knew by name all throughout the college year, but it felt like it truly lacked the cachet that the draft was built up to be in the year prior. We go through 10 picks without a single trade on the first night, and then all of a sudden, we get 10 trades over the next 20, and I don't even know how many we got last night. And it's funny if you watch, you know, the by-the-book write-ups, if you watch the by-the-book bottom lines or the by-the-book draft synopsis, you'll see, pick, I'll just make up a scenario. 42, Sacramento Kings via the Golden State Warriors, via the Milwaukee Bucks, via the Houston Rockets. What? I don't care. Who made the pick? The Kings made the pick. All right, fine. Keep it moving. But we have to have this like complete detail on how this particular team got to that pick. Now, I get that. There were a lot of trades last night, and second-round picks are being thrown around all over the place, and we saw the Sacramento Kings make their selection. A big man. They got some people talking. 7-1 French prospect went to Stanford. Maxime Renaud. He's got one of those last names. James, I had to ask James, like, how do you say it? And he said it. And because I didn't practice it, I'm probably going to say it wrong. But I believe it's Maxime Renaud.
Yeah, it's close.
It's close?
That's good enough.
What is it?
It's you're doing it right without doing like an accent.
Okay.
Which makes it sound like you're like making fun of the accent, but it's
okay.
Not.
Okay.
The video I watched of a French guy saying it was like Maxime Renaud, but that's crazy. So just Renaud, I think works.
I just knew the last letter was silent.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you got to be careful how you talk on this show, but I knew that the last letter was silent.
Very
and
good.
I was like, okay, you got this. And
it's an
Maxime
X, right?
Renaud. Nope. No, it's definitely not. It is definitely not. But he's a 7-1 center who can step away from the rim and shoot a little bit. was listening to Matt George this morning, reading up on, you know, some of the different write-ups, Sam Vecenie being one of them. I know James was talking about this early. Sam Vecenie, one of the best, you know, write-ups when it comes to college players. His offensive skill set is it's really good. He was projected by many to be again, projection is whatever. We've learned projection, especially through the NFL draft, means absolutely nothing. But point being, he was projected to go in the first round. And when you read about why he might have fell to the second round, it has to do with his defense. His defense is a little sketchy at best. And I don't know if that means he's just bad defensively. I don't know if that means he's not quick to pick up on defensive schemes. It seems like schematically working on the offensive end, learning on the offensive end, learning different offensive schemes is easier for so many different guys. And part of that could be it's just no matter what level of basketball you're in or you're at, you're taught to like move a certain way. You're taught to move without the ball. You're taught to, you know, run towards the pass, run away from the pass. You're taught to go over the screen, under the screen, depending on who your coach is. Over the screen, under the screen, depending on the philosophy. And it seems like so many guys can pick up on that pretty well. But you hear so often about guys struggling to play defense. Defensive schemes sometimes are so much more intricate. We heard the line here in Sacramento over and over and over again over the last couple of years about moving on a string. We heard that. I don't think we heard it as much in the finals, but we definitely heard it in the Western Conference Finals, Oklahoma City's defense moving on a string. It means they're all moving in sync. And sometimes guys struggle moving in sync with their teammates. And that's why we've always been careful. At least I have always tried to be careful about when I criticize a player defensively. I was actually taught this from a professional basketball player. Don't be so quick to think you know what a player did wrong because you don't know what the other four people on the floor were supposed to do. We saw that a ton. I'm not trying to be funny. I'm not trying to get my jokes off, but we saw it a ton when Buddy Hield was here. Specifically in regards to Harrison Barnes, people would be hypercritical of Harrison Barnes when he was playing exactly the type of defense he was supposed to. Buddy was supposed to make a move, but he made the move the wrong way, but he made the move too late. And you could always see it over and over again. You could see the look on Harrison Barnes' face when it was like, all right, like and not that Harrison Barnes is thinking this because he's certainly not. When you sit in the film room, that's on Buddy Hield. For those that don't know what Buddy Hield is supposed to do, everyone thinks Harrison Barnes is letting players get by him. And it just seems to be a more difficult thing to pick up. Now, listening to Scott Perry's philosophies on a basketball team, listening to him talk about enhancing the identity of this roster, listening to him yesterday talk about what he expects the identity of this roster to be, it's like, okay, this kid might not be the best defender right now, but clearly, based on those, I'm going to call them principles, that might not be the exact word it should be, but let's call them principles that Scott Perry laid out for the Sacramento Kings, he expects Maxime Renault to be able to play defensively. He expects him to be able to keep up what Doug Christie is going to want to do defensively. Now let's hit the pause button right there. He is a second round pick. Now the position in which he plays certainly got people's attention because there's a number of things you can do here. I think a lot of us expect Trey Lyles to be gone. And Trey was a big who could stretch the floor. He was a big who was more comfortable stretching the floor than Domantas Sabonis was. Of course, he rarely played the five. He prominently played the four. But now you have a situation where if you wanted to use a true big, potentially a rim protector, who could pull out to the three-point line a little bit, yo, maybe you have that option. I know a lot of people immediately think, hey, what does this mean for Jonas Valanciunas? I caution everybody to hold up on that because, again, he's a second-round pick. This brother might play in Stockton. He could certainly be on the main roster, but he could also be there as, you know, the last guy on the bench, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I'm saying let's not be too quick to try to dissect what this looks like. But of course, that's what we do, man. It's the off season. When we get back here Monday, it's the start of free agency. When we get back here Monday, things are going to be happening. Now, whether they're happening with the Sacramento Kings remains to be seen. There's a lot of really good reporting from my friend Matt George about what the market looks like for some of these Sacramento Kings players, particularly Malik Monk, who we have talked about extensively over the course of the last couple of days, particularly since the draft, particularly since Neek was drafted. It was like, huh. Now, we started to, it was probably earlier this week, maybe late last week, where we started to, you know, pose the question, like, do you need Malik Monk and DeMar DeRozan? If you move one, you have to keep the other, right? And I think for so long, the idea was, well, the Sacramento Kings are moving DeMar DeRozan because, you know, he doesn't fit. All right. He's a ball stopper. All right. Cool. So you got to keep Malik in that situation. But then you start to listen a little closer. Then you start to get into these text exchanges and you're like, man, are we? Then you just start to look at the surface of this basketball team. And you have to ask the question, are we sure DeMar DeRozan doesn't work here? Now, I think we know DeMar DeRozan doesn't work with the roster as it's currently constructed. But everyone's of the belief that this roster has to change, right? So if the roster changes, does DeMar DeRozan make more sense? If DeMar DeRozan winds up making more sense for the Sacramento Kings, does that make Malik Monk more expandable? And the real tough question is, does Malik Monk have a market? Don't get it twisted. I'm not a pizza guy, but I'm a Malik Monk guy. If Malik Monk plays in Sacramento next year, I'm going to root for him. I'm going to cheer for him. I'm a fan of Malik Monk. Malik Monk plays somewhere else, I'm going to root for him. I'm going to cheer for him because I'm a fan of Malik Monk. I like the way he plays. I like his vibe. I like his energy. I like what he brings to the team. I like what he brings to the city. I love how much the fan base adores him. But at the same time, it's like, I don't know if you need both of them. I think you can move Malik. But the harsh reality might be, as Matt George was reporting last night, there might not be a robust market for him. And I can co-sign that a little bit because I know last year we got ourselves into a tizzy about what was going to happen when Malik Monk became a free agent. Money dried up, dog. Those aren't my words. Those are his. It wasn't there for him. All of those offers that we thought might be there, they weren't. We're going to talk a lot more about Malik. We're going to talk a lot more about the draft. We're going to talk a lot more about free agency coming up. We'll take a look around the rest of the NBA as well. The phone lines will be open for you all day. As you can see, Casey's not here. My man Kyle Madsen's going to join me here in just a couple of minutes. We're so happy you tapped in. Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 1320.
This is D'Lo and Casey on ESPN 1320, brought to you by Sky River Casino.
Back in here, no KC today, no Jesse Tapia, but I do have my main man Kyle Madsen here with me, who I'm gonna pull away from all of his post-show work for the insiders. He's gonna be here for the next 4 hours, but I'm gonna make him spend the next 30 minutes here talking to me about some things going on with the Sacramento Kings. I'm not one of those people. I try not to be one of those people who get overly excited about the draft and draft picks. I think we have conditioned ourselves to like go watch highlights, and highlights are just that, like they're highlights. Like you're normally watching the best part of
guy looks great in his highlights.
Yeah, you know, it's a little harder to find, you know, programs or accounts that give you a full breakdown of a player's game, the good and the bad. But I certainly enjoyed watching Neek Clifford and some of the different highlights. I did try to spend some time on Synergy last night and watching maybe what might be a more complete picture of him, and looking for shortcomings on the defensive end, looking like just looking for the way that he moves up and down the floor. But overall, man, he's a I like his game, and I'm trying to kind of end it at that and say, yeah, I see why he fits with this team. I see why Scott Perry had him on a short list of players that he was willing to move into the first round for.
Yeah, I think the excitement is warranted because, A, it feels like the vibes have been down for so long. That sure. Anything to bring the vibes up is going to be a big
and
winner.
Newness is going to do that. Newness is almost always going to do that.
Yeah, and newness in the scope of the Kings got a couple of steals based on consensus mock drafts or consensus big boards or whatever.
Yeah.
But it feels like every good thing for the Kings recently has come with like like Zach LaVine. Oh, really exciting player, but does he really fit? The Kings are kind of becoming the Bulls. It's like, oh, the DeMar DeRozan signing. Okay, but like, does he really fit with the offense? Like, it's been all these things. What we're seeing now is, hey, Nick Clifford and Maxime Raynaud, maybe they're good, maybe they're not. There's just no but. There's like, here's how he fits.
Yeah.
There doesn't need to be a trade for him to fit.
Right.
He doesn't need to be particularly like adept at scoring necessarily out the gate. Like, can he do these little things on the margins? I think there's reason for optimism here because it doesn't involve like, okay, but there's overlap. How does he fit? What's next?
Yeah.
And I think that's great. I think that's why there's so much like positivity and optimism around the two picks.
It feels like they drafted a player who can come in and play like the player he is.
Yes.
Rather than, we're going to need you to... All right, man, we're going to need you to do something a little bit different, right?
Yeah.
And I wonder, there is so much talk about Keegan Murray. And I think Keegan showed himself to be a solid defender. And then it became like, hey, man, you're the primary defender on this team now.
Yeah.
Like, you're the guy. And people have tried to blame 50 different things on why his shooting percentages were different from his rookie year, why things seem to have kind of tapered off a little bit. For Keegan, and I think part of it is his responsibilities for the NBA team he was drafted to completely changed.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense. I also feel like just what you said there about he doesn't have to change his game to contribute. He can just be the player he is.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's kind of funny because I think Devin Carter is the same way, but he's 6'3" or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's that overlap positionally with Keon Ellis, with Malik Monk, with Zach LaVine to a different extent. I feel like the reason I'm so high on Nick Clifford is because there's not that. There's not the concern about size. There's not a concern about scoring ability or whatever it is. They're just like, oh, it's a 3-and-D wing. That's amazing. They've needed one of those. It's a 3-and-D wing that can like move his feet.
They've needed one of those for like a decade and a half.
Right. And so just that Scott Perry, whether Nick Clifford is good or not, is almost secondary for me right now. The fact that Scott Perry went, oh, hey, we need one of those guys. There's one of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to make them. We're going to actually give up assets to move up to go get that guy.
Yeah.
Like, hey.
Yeah.
Wow. What a concept.
And that's the thing where I think so many rookies, young players kind of get stuck, and it's that they get drafted to teams who they're drafting a player that they're trying to mold into something else that they aren't.
Yeah.
And like so many more, you know, I still believe that this is true. More teams in the NFL ruin quarterbacks than help them. Like there are more quarterbacks, I think, that are drafted to wrong teams that,
got it. Yeah,
it's hard for me to believe Josh Rosen is this bad, right? Like,
sure.
Josh Rosen coming out of college, well, like, yo, so, now I always thought, now it could, I could be wrong,
yeah,
but I always thought Josh Rosen was a good quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he wasn't great, but oh, man, he's going to have a good NFL career. He's going to have a fine NFL career.
Better than out of the league in 3 years.
That, right? And you wind up in a Cardinals situation where, you know, your GM turnover, you've got coach turnover. Oh, now we're moving him, and I can't even remember. I think he went to the Dolphins. I can't remember where he went after that.
That sounds right.
But it was just like, okay, he's going from one bad franchise to another. It's the Sam Darnold thing. I think Sam Darnold is a lot closer to the quarterback that People saw him as like with the San Francisco 49ers and you know what he did after that with Minnesota versus what he was with the New York Jets.
Sure. Yeah.
The Jets have a long track record of destroying NFL quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that happens in the league. I feel like that happens in the NBA where teams, Charlotte, they're a bad basketball team that can't develop. I wonder how many times it's happened here where you have players who get here and they're asked to be something that they're not. Mm-hmm. And this could very much be the case, but you're asked to be more than you are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you've got to do it quick. You have to do it now.
Mm-hmm.
You can't grow into it. You've got to do it now.
Mm-hmm.
And you just wind up with, you know, these young men who are like, I'm trying. And then they become journeyman players who are, you know, playing overseas in 4 years.
I think there's a little bit of risk of that here, where with Reynolds and with Clifford, because James and I were talking about this a little bit, and maybe we're getting too far ahead of ourselves, but the Kings are still a 40-ish win team right now.
Okay.
And for me. And the only way I think that's going to change substantially, we were talking about this at the end of the show, at the end of the Insiders, like, they have to make a trade, and a substantial one, if they're going to impact their wins and losses in any kind of significant way. My biggest concern here, and while it's a thumbs up for the draft, that's awesome that you know, Scott Perry swung a trade up into the first round and all that, and got a couple of steals, got good value,
sure.
Presumably. If this is the extent of their moves, along with Tyus Jones and another point guard, it's like, that's not enough, man. Now all of a sudden you're asking Nate Clifford to maybe be something more than he is.
Mm.
Maybe now you're relying a little bit more on Maxime Reynaud than you anticipated.
So let me ask you to elaborate on that. It's not enough to what?
To be better
than you were last year.
Yeah, because I've been of the opinion, I don't know where you land on this, I've been of the opinion you either have to be significantly worse in service of gathering assets and getting better,
sure.
Give yourself a window to get better over the next 2 or 3 years.
Sure.
Or you need
I don't feel like that scenario is possible, by the way.
Yeah, I don't think that.
Of the way that this team is made up, I don't think that's even remotely possible.
Yeah, you would. I don't think they have the tradable contracts.
Right.
That's a difficult. So I think they're rightly going, all right, well, hey, we just got to kind of push chips in here.
Yeah.
What can we build the right team around Zach LaVine, Domantas Sabonis, and Keegan Murray and DeMar DeRozan? Can we build the right team? Can we do that and get them to the playoffs?
Mm-hmm.
Can we just do that? It feels right now like they're in the middle of those two lanes.
Let's go back. How long is a year? 52 weeks. Let's go back 53 weeks ago, right before DeMar DeRozan signed.
Okay.
In fact, let's go back 51. Let's go back to after DeMar DeRozan, like right after the 4th of July. I'm on with you in Mexico. We're talking about DeMar DeRozan signing with the Kings. You thought what about this basketball team on that day?
I was cautiously optimistic. I probably had my purple glasses on a little bit.
Okay.
In saying like, oh, I'm reading people smarter than me telling me how DeMar DeRozan is going to fit and how awesome it's going to be. So it's like, all right, like we asked them to get better. I think my exact thought at the time was they didn't get better in the way I thought they needed to, but they've at least insulated themselves from Malik Monk goes down and all of a sudden they can't score the basketball.
Okay.
That was kind of my thought. It felt like the roster was better, and that turned out to be not to be the case.
Okay. I think you might have just answered the next part of this, though.
Okay.
Did the Sacramento Kings underachieve, or did we overestimate them?
The second one.
We overestimated them.
Yeah, I think so.
I disagree a little bit. Now, it was my question, so I'm allowed to cop out of it. It's kind of in the middle.
Sick.
Right. Again, it's my
tight,
question.
Tight.
They won 40 games last year. I won't do Kenny's 55, but
I had 51 was my number.
So we'll go 50. Like, if we met in the middle, and this is a 45, 46 win basketball team, it's essentially the same thing they were the year prior. Now, that's going to draw emotion as well.
Mm-hmm.
because that wasn't the goal. The goal wasn't to be a 45-46 win team that ultimately didn't make it to the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings me back to, if we pull back our expectations while also recognizing the chaotic nature of the season and the thought that maybe they underachieved a little bit, because I'm not going to change my tune of what I said when the De'Aaron Fox trade happened. They went to get Zach LaVine because I think they thought it was a wash.
Mm.
They thought, okay, maybe it's not perfect, but Zach can do a lot of the things De'Aaron can do on the offensive end. If we can just survive the second part of the season with that, we'll finish what we were going to finish at if De'Aaron Fox was here. Of course, you had dug yourself into that hole in December. Doug Christie, and those guys have kind of drug themselves out of it. And now it was like, okay, what now? How is this going to transpire the rest of the way? So I'm going to maintain that same thought. It's close to a wash because Zach LaVine is not the defender that De'Aaron Fox is. So if we go to that 45 slot, if we go to that 45 point, maybe these marginal improvements will help a little bit more than we recognize.
Yeah,
because without the Mike Brown firing, without the De'Aaron Fox trade stuff, without all of that stuff, maybe you can just land on, yo, let's play basketball, let's lock in. There's not like, yo, we're here, let's do this. Maybe that helps put the team in a bit of a different space.
I hope so. I'm super skeptical.
That might be wishful thinking. I understand.
They just like I did the hope thing last year. I'm out. I'm done. So
yeah, I understood.
And again, I'm saying this all too on June 27th.
Mm-hmm.
There may be a trade coming.
Sure.
That dramatically changes how everybody feels about the direction of the Kings. I personally don't believe that the players they have fit together well enough to be substantially better than 40 to 45 wins. Okay. I think it's a collection of talent that. What's the phrase? The whole is greater than the sum of the parts. I think it's that, but backwards.
The sum of the parts is greater than the whole.
It's greater than the entire picture, the big picture.
It just doesn't feel appropriate.
No, it doesn't. That's my bad. But no, it feels like the opposite of that phrase because the Kings individually have a lot of really good players. I just don't know that they're maximizing those players in a way that gets them where we think that collection of talent could be. And I think it was evidenced in some of their late season games where, yeah, they had all the turmoil, but they'd been past it for a while. And then they go into Washington and lose. Or they play a home play-in game against the Dallas Mavericks team that had an equally traumatic year.
Yeah.
That maybe even some would argue more traumatic year. And got mollywopped at home.
Yeah.
Like, those are the kinds of things where I have a really hard time going like, yeah, hey, I'm all in. And I was in on the Kings last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't get there this year. I'd love to be proven wrong. But I don't look at their roster construction and go, yeah, Nick Clifford and Maxime Reynaud are the substantial changes they need. Maybe I'm not insane.
Yeah, I think I started feeling like this before the draft. Maybe it was either Tuesday or Wednesday. I didn't think the Kings, and I had heard, you know, all of the reports on the air, on your show, Matt George, you know, all of the different people who have been, Jake Fisher, I have had extensive conversations with James with the microphone off. Like it was clear. There was the opportunity for them to move into the first round. But somewhere around like Tuesday, I was like, I don't think they're doing that. And I think that's the approach I'm just taking to this offseason is I'm not expecting them to do anything. If, you know, I've really started to kind of wrap my brain around the idea that Malik Monk isn't back here next year. But, you know, talking with Matt, like listening to Matt's podcast, following up on a few things. Like I really absolutely thought there was a deal to be made for him with Toronto.
Mm.
And by all outward appearance, that might not be the case. And I don't think you move a player like Malik Monk just for the sake of moving him, just because like He's still a really good player. He is a valuable asset to this fan base. He is a guy who will keep your fan base engaged. But I'm just kind of the belief, like, yeah, maybe there's a free agent signing or two. They'll probably be of the Dennis Schroeder variety. Obviously, I would be thrilled if it was Russell Westbrook, but I think most people would be very underwhelmed if it was Russell Westbrook.
Would you buy a jersey?
A Russell Westbrook Kings jersey, no. No. I don't own one single jersey. Well, I own one. It's a Kobe Bryant autographed jersey, but that's the only one I have.
It's 2029. Russell Westbrook played a year for the Kings, and it was mostly meh. He is retired, and he's going to go to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
You're at concerts at the park. You're going to concerts in the park. It's 94 degrees outside.
Yeah.
That Russell Westbrook jersey is hanging in your closet.
Why is it there?
In your closet?
Did you buy it for me?
Maybe.
Okay. Thank you.
It might be in the cart right now.
in advance. Thank you. Yeah.
You're not wearing it?
I might.
You're wearing it.
I might.
You're wearing it. You're going to see that. You're going to have some shoes with some purple in them. You're like,
I might wear it.
Yeah.
I might wear it. I always thought if I got a Russell Westbrook jersey, it would be the white Oklahoma City one. I always thought those were clean. Yeah.
That's the jersey I picture him in.
Man, you are reading my mind. I saw something. I was getting my hair cut, as I've outlined on this show. My brother Ricardo, for whatever reason, he chooses Fox Sports over ESPN pretty regularly on the TVs in the shop.
I got some questions for Ricardo.
Yeah, and so that show with Acho and Shady and I think
Unspeakable?
It's
Unspeakable? Don't Speak? Speak Now?
I'm not sure what it's called.
I think I'm naming Taylor Swift albums.
It's those three football players. The question was, when you think about Kevin Durant's career, what jersey do you see him in?
Mm-hmm.
And I think I had my answer, and I was like, wait, is that the right answer? What is your answer?
Golden State.
So that was the same thing I thought, which is, I don't know if that's...
My lasting... I have two lasting images of Kevin Durant. One, him stepping up to the three-point line, in LeBron's face.
Oh my God! Yeah.
In the finals, to hit a dagger and kind of say like
killer.
that was a very on-court, I'm the best player in the world right now moment, and so that's why. And the other one is his toe on the line in Brooklyn.
Oh man, yeah.
Those are my two lasting Kevin Durant.
But what's crazy
images.
Is he went to an NBA Finals with the Thunder.
Mm-hmm.
He was up 3-1 on the Warriors. Like, it's funny that there were two 3-1 comebacks in that postseason.
To me, the way
he won an MVP,
I thought the first 3-1 comeback was even more impressive. When you factor in Steph Curry's injury, I think that's a callback to last week. I was just joking. No, the thing with when Kevin Durant got treated the way he got treated by Oklahoma City when he went back there. I'm not picturing him in an Oklahoma City jersey anymore.
I got you. Okay.
The Phoenix thing was a disaster.
Awful.
Brooklyn went way sideways. He's going to go.
I mean, he was out for a year in Brooklyn.
Right. He's probably going to finish his career with two titles. And those were both, he was the MVP of both of those in Golden State. So.
Yeah. That was absolutely my first thought. I said it's the Golden State Warriors. And I was like, I don't think there was a right or wrong answer. But I immediately thought, that's the wrong answer. It has to be Oklahoma City, but it's not. I think about stupid-ass Kevin Durant in his face, like, doing the meme bit, and then I think about the video that Legends put out the other day. Then I think about the shot on LeBron James, and it's like, man, he was the best player on a team that had one of the greatest players ever on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just how, and I don't know, I feel like I'm on an island with that. I don't think that will get mentioned in either of their career breakdowns, but KD is just like, he's been such an incredible basketball player. His run at Oklahoma City was amazing, but that stretch with Golden State just sticks out, and I'm sure it's because of the titles and you know, playing that deep into the into the playoffs.
That was
every year.
That was a Golden State team that was ascending, and obviously Steph Curry was going on his early in his path to becoming one of the 10 or 15 best players ever. And then they won 73 games, and then Kevin Durant just joined them. And I know we don't want to, because nostalgia is such a strong, has such a strong pull when it comes to things like sports and how we view sports and past teams and athletes. The 2017 Warriors are might be the best NBA team of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because of Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
And Steph Curry's my favorite athlete ever. I have defended Draymond Green to the ends of the earth. Klay Thompson is amazing. They're all going to the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
The Warriors are going to be good whether Kevin Durant joined them or not. But Kevin Durant joining them put them into this echelon of, oh, good, like really, really good team, championship team, to, oh, it's the 96 Bulls. It's some Celtics team when there were four teams in the league and the 17 Warriors, the 17-18 Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
Like that it put them into that echelon, and that to me is why Kevin Durant gets the Warrior jersey.
Is okay. This got a little out of hand.
That's fine.
Sorry. If you were ranking the greatest players of all time,
mm-hmm.
is Kevin Durant above Steph Curry?
No.
Okay.
I need this to be, I like Kevin Durant so much.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Durant is one of my favorite players ever. I just like mm-hmm. the person. I love his game. He's might be the best scorer we've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly one of the best I've ever watched. But I think when you start factoring that in, the ring thing is such a substantial part of it.
Okay. Alternate universe.
Okay.
It's KD on that Warriors team and not Steph. Are the results the same?
Ooh. I don't know. Like, I don't.
And it's Steph that comes over from Oklahoma City and Draymond tells him to get lost because they won without him. And you
oh, and KD has four rings now and Steph doesn't?
Well, I'm asking, can that Golden State Warriors team, would that Warriors team have...
I think it implodes.
Really?
Yeah. I don't think enough credit goes...
I know where you're going. I know exactly where you're going. Go ahead.
This sounds so stupid. I don't think people talk about enough
yeah.
how good of a teammate Steph Curry
is. No, you're 100, no, you're 100% right.
But I think that's...
You have to manage egos when you're... He's so good. He's probably, if you were ranking the top 15 players of all time, Steph is in the list.
Mm-hmm.
If you were ranking the ones that were lacking in ego, Steph's probably number one.
Yeah, sure.
Because there's no way it's Jordan.
At
there's
least
no
publicly.
Way it's LeBron. There's no way it's Magic. Like, right. You can run the Larry Bird, give me a break. All Kareem, all, Shaq, mm-hmm. all, not even close.
Mm-hmm.
Steph is very much a, it's cool.
At least publicly.
Which is what makes, to me at least, what he did at the Olympics so special.
Mm-hmm.
Casey posted a reel that looked like it was shot from the stands mm-hmm. the other day on Instagram. And the thing I kept watching as he was hitting threes on this side of the floor was you've got LeBron, you know, on the floor, but then you got, you know, Ty, you got Ant-Man, you've got mm-hmm. the best basketball players on earth
mm-hmm.
going, ah!
Right, acting like little kids.
Yeah,
yes.
Like and Steph is having that moment mm-hmm. where it's like, I'm the one. I don't have to say that.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying it for me. I'm the one. You might be onto something with that. That's a good call.
Thanks.
It might even plug. You're good at this.
Thanks.
You should do this every day.
Well.
Now you're going to tell me to go to break because it's time to go to break.
I'm waiting for you. I am doing short sentences because I need you to go.
You are also producing the show today. My man Kyle Mattson, he's not going anywhere. He's got other work to do. He's making sure that this show stays on the air all day. But big thanks to our man Kyle Mattson from The Insiders. You're actually going to hear more from Kyle Mattson and James Hamm later. I'll explain why when we get back here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.